Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. The show hosted by the man with the rhythm within him. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. By the way, we are raising a little bit of money over at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you might wonder why I'm talking like a horse announcer. It's because I'm mocking horse-voiced announcers. You see, but about $5,000. Okay, so dig this, ladies and gentlemen. There is video, of course, as you might know, for those of you who watch my shows on YouTube. However, it's not live on the network at the moment. All right, after we get this bit of money in, we'll be able to do live video cast from the American Freedom Radio website. At the moment, we've got one particular computer that's down as well, and that needs to be replaced. So please go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and give them a little bit of a donation. Go through their Patreon if you want to support them every month. We're always putting out content, and we're here for the right reasons. And it's largely commercial-free. Now, I do understand, ladies and gentlemen, that times are tough, and we've just come off a six-week period where my wife has been recovering from a major surgery, and she had no income during that whole six-week period. And thank you so much of those of you to who donated to help us through that time. That time has now passed. And of course, by the time she got back to work, they said, oh, no, we can't have you on for as many days as before because we've got other people filling the position and so on and so forth. So it's like, extra stress, extra money worries. And then there was the YouTube adpocalypse that I'm sure many of you heard about, where you're going, okay, we've got a 60% revenue drop in March and a 60% revenue drop in April on top of that. We're going from $180 US a month in passive ad revenue from the YouTube account at the Vinny Eastwood Show to like $30 this month. All right. It is freaking destroyed everything. I'm not the only YouTuber being affected by it. There's a lot of guys out there who are now asking for help from the YouTube community to help pay their bills and things like that. So if you can, go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and my Patreon page is linked on that. I would very much appreciate that right about now. Because it's, you know when you're stressed and for some reason a whole bunch of other things start going awry? Just to test you, you know, just to stress you out just that little bit more. So I was going outside to get some salad for a sandwich. And of course, I tripped up on the slippery step, and now the entire left side of my body is kind of sore. It's a weird, pleasant sensation. Now, might have a masturbation thing later. Now, my very special guest, completely different topic, is Danny Bamping from the No Party, broadcasting live in the UK right now. Danny, welcome to the program. You do realise I told you before about remembering to take your mic off of mute.
Sorry, yes. Good evening, or rather good morning. Good start, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. So, let's try that again. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Thanks for inviting me. It's good to be back.
Yeah, man. Well, what we had a whole list of things that we had written down for this, so I'd like you to kick us off if you can, if you've got that in front of you.
Of course. No, I don't.
Bloody hell! Absolutely terrible. All right, so
copy and paste the text from that document and send it through on the messenger so I can read it.
One can only hope. Let's do the manual way.
Did you want me to share the screen?
Well, when you've got relevant things that you want to bring up and everything. So, ladies and gentlemen, I must warn you prefab that we're going to be testing a little bit of a different format here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The radio listeners may not be able to benefit quite so much from it, but we're attempting to use the guests to produce themselves and do their own editing while they're live on air. And what that means intended for the YouTube audience is that when a guest is actually talking about a picture that they've got on their computer, Skype has this little function called share screen, and they can just go, share screen, and then show it. And my Skype recorder will actually record them sharing their screen and showing you the picture. Then as soon as they stop sharing that screen, it goes straight back to their webcam as if nothing's ever happened. It's like cutting in and out, doing the editing for me. So that's what we're experimenting with here, and I apologize if there are any fritzy delays with it. So I believe you do have that list in front of you, don't you, Dante? Did I say Dante?
I do know. You did say Dante. Yes, you did. That's all right. It's Danny. But anyway, you have that list for me. I know you know. It's all good. Yeah, I have it in front of me. And I suppose, where do we start off? We spoke last time about the No Party, which is this global movement that myself and others have set up to help the independent candidates, really, no matter where they are, no matter what level, you know, whether it's in local councils or MP or peace crime commissioners or even like France, President of France, etc. So it's really kind of because political parties controlled really by, you know, the banks, really, and the funders, their donators, the corporations, the companies, and the big conglomerates and all that stuff. So really, the party itself is really a kind of puppet machine for the elite to just kind of guide legislation and guide governments, etc., and what they do and where they go. And that's why they control the money, and that's why you'll never see a political party put forward an idea like let's nationalize the banks and take over the money supply and the monetary policy, or let's bring in a transaction tax, like 1% on everybody's tax or everybody's transactions, you know, 1% through the bank would create four times more than it would, you know, all the 362 different taxes that are in Britain, including the tampon tax, which isn't it?
Which is colloquially known as the Tampax.
Yeah, Tampax tax. I mean, you know, it's nuts that women have to pay VAT and tax on that kind of stuff. It's just like they're basically saying it's not a necessity, which is insane. But obviously, at the moment in the UK, we've had the Brexit vote, which was 48-52 to leave. So now we're leaving, and we've, you know, exercised or executed Article 50, whatever, and all that stuff. So now that's happening. The government know that they're so far ahead. The government, as in the Conservative Party, I should say, know that they're so far ahead that they've called a general election, so that they can get an even bigger majority in the House of Commons, so that they can push for even more legislation, austerity and snooping, secrecy, cuts on benefits, you know, you name it, it's all happening, really. It's all focused on this Brexit and the UK leaving the EU. And now everybody's putting forward their ideas of, you know, we've got to give Britain the best Brexit deal, and which party can bring that? You know, can it be going to be the cons? Are they going to con us again like they always do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's there staring you in the face, isn't it? Con. And Labour, you know.
Yeah, well, they're trying not to put all their Brexit in one basket.
Yeah. And then you've got Lib Dems, like, saying today in their manifesto, which they've manifested.
manifesto. Oh, my God. Oh my God! Actually, the manifestation manifesto.
Yeah, really, trademark. Absolutely, and exactly. And this is just nuts, really. And the Lib Dems have come up with, we'll have a second referendum, which is complete insanity, really. I mean, you know, it's like they're trying to grab votes for all the Remainers, and we know that we're leaving, so job done. So why, you know, the Yellows, as I call them, want to get involved with that? is beyond me, really. It's just a vote-grabbing thing and saying, oh, we'll legalise cannabis, and they're all coming up with this mad stuff, and Labour is saying, oh, we'll privatise the water and the gas and nationalise it, because Margaret Thatcher, of course, in the 80s privatised it. And so the thing is, it's that they're all these pledges in these manifestos that they've manifested, you know, and really it's just a bunch of lies to trick voters into going, oh, do I take the red pill or the blue pill? But really, it doesn't matter which pill you take, because you're still going to be in the matrix, and you still take a couple of sucks of those pills, and it's going to be purple underneath. So it doesn't matter. It's about like America. It doesn't matter whether you vote red or blue. It's an insanity of a system for the last few hundred years, which has gone round and round and round in a circle, and every decade or every 4 years, 5 years, the public decide, oh, we'll vote for Chelsea. No Arsenal. No Chelsea. No Arsenal. But they're just going to, you know, left wing, right wing. It's the wings of the same bird, you know?
Yeah.
And this is the thing, is that what people don't realise is, if you look into history, you look at Parliament and why it was set up and what it was intended for, you know, it was intended for independence. Independent MPs to represent their people in their constituency independently. That's it, period. And that's how it operated for hundreds of years. And that's why, you know, during that period, if the monarchy stepped out of line, it was off with their head. If they committed treason, they were gone. And that was because the people were represented independently by independent MPs. And it was only kind of the last 150, 200 years where they gave the power of money creation to the banks, the private banks. And then because that power is not in the government or not, you know, controlled by the government, then the private banks have then funded MPs to form what was called the Tory Party. And then it's changed its name to the Conservatives. That's why, obviously, people refer to them as Tories or Conservatives, same thing. But that was their historic name. And this is the thing, is that then you look at the Labour Party, it's the same thing. It's like, it's the same thing, but just a different colour. You know, they're funded by different banks, they're funded by different entities. But essentially, when you go to the root of it, it's the same people that control both sides. And it gives people this illusion of choice, which isn't there. And that's why it's just a game, really, a game of lies and a game of bullshit.
Well, I disagree. It's not just a game of lies and a game of bullshit. Technically, it's just a game where one side has hedged their bets and always wins.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's a two-horse race every time, and it's stupid. And the thing is, people need to wake up, and they are waking up, to vote independently. And I'll give you some great examples. Look at Trump. You know, he hijacked the Republican Party kind of nomination on the back of, I'm not a politician and I've not paid tax and I don't care and I'm a rebel and all that stuff. And then he gets in and now he's the president of the United States, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, that's nuts. And then all of a sudden the people in the UK rebelled in a way and said, we want to leave the EU. And which is great, you know, in my opinion. I was a big leaver, and I was really happy that, you know, that happened. And then now all of a sudden you've got Emmanuel Macron, you know, this French president now who's been voted in. And, he, you know, 15 months ago, he set up this independent movement, political movement, left office because he was a government minister, left office and then settled this completely independent movement, not a party, and then 15 months later he's president of France. And also on a local basis in the UK, especially down here in the southwest, you've got places like Frome in Somerset, or Frome, whatever you want to say it. Their local council there is completely independent, and down here in Plymouth and just over the border, if you like, into Cornwall in Saltash, you know, a couple of weeks ago they voted in 10 independent councillors. So the independents are in control of that council. And in South East Devon, you've got Claire Wright standing as an independent MP. I think she got something like 14,000 votes and came second to the Conservative guy last time. And I'm sure that'll be even closer this time. So I think, and we do have one independent MP, which is Lady Hallam, over in Ireland and stuff. So there is one. but this independent movement is growing because people are waking up to the fact that the party system, political parties and the party politics is all controlled.
I had a very terrible thought that the elite who know and have figured out that their duo shell game isn't working have also been working on a plan behind the scenes for a long, long time to bring out a third option and to back those candidates and play them in secret so that eventually people will wake up to that too, but then there'll always be another shell. There'll always be another independent candidate. There'll always be a different way. It's like kind of thinking about playing a game against one of the players who doesn't actually get held to the rules of the game, essentially. Yeah. That's the difficulty that we're dealing with here. It was just a thought.
No, I mean, you're right. And I think the thing is that, you know, for all that evil requires is for good men to do nothing. And that's why, this, you know, after setting up the No Party with other people and making that happen, and now, you know, it's expanded, there's other places in the world that are now doing the No Party and connecting with us. And this is the thing, is that from my perspective, I had to stand. So this election, I've put myself up on the ballot paper in my local constituency, which is Plymouth, Sutton and Devonport. And so I'm the independent candidate for my area. I'm the only one in the whole of Plymouth and the three different constituencies down here. And a few years ago in 2010, you know, Brian Gerrish, the guy from the UK column, local guy, you know, out in their social media and alternative news and stuff, putting out the good word and the truth, you know, and he stood as an independent and I voted for him then. And then 2 years ago in 2015, you know, I went to vote and there was no independent candidate. So, you know, I signed for my vote. They gave it to me. I brought it home. You know, I couldn't make a vote because there was no one on the paper that I could trust or vote for. And that's what made me, you know, this year put my name forward, you know, even though it's a snap election, you know, for a lot of other reasons, dodgy reasons. And so, you know, there it is. My name's on the ballot paper. I crowdfunded £1,200 in a short amount of time. So I'd like to thank those people who supported me, especially Jim and Dean and Joe and a few others, which have been fantastic. So, yeah, and there I am, DannyBamping.com is my website. So I've launched that in the last week or so. And I haven't manifested a manifesto. I've come up with some proclamations, which I think is a better word.
I have not manifested a manifesto, but I will proclaim some proclamations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the other thing, is that, you know, the Labour Party manifesto got published, you know, near the last 2 days. And, you know, and everybody's looking at Jeremy Corbyn as the messiah. And Jeremy Corbyn is an interesting chap, don't get me wrong. I think, you know, he is a good man and he wants to do the right thing and for the people and et cetera. But he knows that he's controlled and you can almost see it, really. And obviously you can see it in his actions, like when he became party leader last year or the year before and then all that stuff. And then they had another vote about whether he was going to be party leader still. And then they had the Brexit. And the thing is with Jeremy Corbyn, he's this guy who's been a backbencher for 25 years and a career politician, if you like. You know, in the past, he's supported and sympathised with the IRA and Hamas and all that stuff. But one of the key things is he's voted against the government and Europe every time. You know, the Maastricht Treaty and all that stuff. His voting record is completely against Europe. And he's massively anti-Europe. But when he came to lead the Labour Party, he then started to spout about remaining. And now he's still spouting about remaining. But really, the man inside must be cringing because he's basically having to toe the party line on the outside, but inside he wants to leave. And that's nuts, really, because if he overstepped...
It sounds like somebody is getting blackmailed with pictures of him in lingerie.
Well, I don't know what he's getting... I don't think he's getting blackmailed. You've got to remember, he's a Fabian because... You've got to remember that he's a Fabian because... And we know about... we talked, didn't we, briefly about the logos of the Fabian Society.
Yeah. And the first being a wolf in sheep's clothing, one who blends in and has a track record of being on your side, and then will eat you and then take your skin and masquerade as you in order to get your next victim. And then there is the other symbol of the Fabian Socialists, which is the tortoise wielding a mighty hammer. The meaning in that is they move very, very slowly towards their goal and then strike the hardest with the hammer.
And there you go. And this is the thing, is that Jeremy Corbyn, I think, is that precisely that type of character. And, you know, he's not the Messiah, even though he's got the same initials.
He's not the Messiah! He's a very naughty boy!
Exactly, and now and again he wears sandals and stuff. But, you know, the people are following him now like he's going to change the world. But, you know, this is the thing, is that in those manifestos that they've manifested, you know, the Tory con one is out tomorrow, you know, none of them are saying, oh, let's nationalise the banks, let's take over the monetary policy, let's get rid of the Remembrancer. You know, the Remembrancer is the unelected member of Parliament, you know, who sits there behind the speaker to tap him on the shoulder if the Parliament makes any legislation that might affect the City of London and the banks. You know, and the Green Party, to their credit, are the only party to include in their manifesto that they manifested to say, hey, let's get rid of this guy. Let's get rid of this guy who's controlling the money supply. And he's there, unelected, in the House of Commons, and he's not a commoner. He's not voted in. And this is the thing, is that you can tell just by that one point that they're saying, oh, we'll spend 48 billion and we'll bring in another 48 billion through raising taxes to the rich, and we'll give you free car parking at hospitals and stuff. And in the meantime, we'll let you vote on whether we're going to let you kill a wild animal with dogs. It's insane. And when the reality is that they're all about NHS and budgets and education and transport and all this stuff, it's all about money. Everything's about money. And nobody addresses the issue of, well, let's take over the creation of money. Because when a government has its hands on the fiscal policy, but not the monetary policy, it's the equivalent of somebody driving a car and you've got your hands on the wheel, but somebody else has got their feet on the pedal. And it's going to be an inevitable car crash. And that's eventually what's going to happen with global currencies, as we've seen throughout history, that they're eventually going to collapse and we'll go into some Bitcoin-y, crypto, government-controlled bullshit currency that we'll all have to use cards and digital shit through our phone.
That's how you'll have to buy your weed in the future, with crypto coins?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, the Lib Dems have come out and said, oh, we'll legalise cannabis and stuff. It's like, well, if you had 650 independent MPs in Parliament, you could take over the money supply, you could free the weed, you could fund all this stuff and make it all happen and give everybody a better quality of life and a better service from your government. But really, in the end, people talk about austerity. It's not austerity, it's usury. And they hate that word, you know, and that's why I've been, in the last couple of days, you know, I've been to these hustings in Plymouth, and they won't let me on the panel. That even though I'm a candidate and stuff, then I've not been invited to sit on the panel yet. You know, I've had to sit there in the audience and live stream it and film it and ask questions and stuff like, well, I should have done, like, why am I on the panel? You know, and this is the thing, they don't want me speaking this kind of stuff because they're all controlled by what their party says. I'm not controlled by no party, which is great branding, by the way. Well,
technically, you are controlled by no party.
I'm not controlled by no party because no party is just a movement. It's non-legal entity. People say, oh, it's a political party. No, it's not. It's furthest from a political party. Yeah. It's a movement to support the independent voters.
I mean, it's
a website.
As far as I know, it's mostly a double entendre.
Exactly. And it's just why we've got this thing where they come up with this free parliament in Britain, which is a great organisation. Credit to Lord Digby Jones and Martin Green doing a great job with that and stuff. Because
do you think it will increase your votes running as a double entendre?
Absolutely. A couple of days before the election, we're going to have a a gig at one of my friend owns a nightclub in Plymouth, so we're going to have a no party party. You know, it's going to be great.
You're just going to have no party at all?
Well, no, it's going to be a no party party because it's, you know, obviously, and this is the thing with you, I am in a way the null of the above vote. I'm the protest vote, the no vote, and for all those 35% rather of the people in my constituency, which is nearly 20,000 people, didn't even bother voting. They're on the electoral register, but they didn't bother voting. There's probably another 5-10,000 people maybe in my constituency who are not even on the electoral register. And it just shows you how disconnected and disillusioned people are from politics, because they don't believe these guys and ladies because they're all part of the criminal gang and stuff.
Well, that's not the reason. That's not the entire reason why they're... Well, the other reason is the Dirty Politics account. So there was a journalist in New Zealand, Nikki Hage, who wrote this book, Dirty Politics. And he found out that New Zealand political parties had adopted this political tactic of the American Republican Party, called Dirty Politics, obviously, hence the name. And the idea was to be as nasty, lying, spiteful, and cruel and gross on stage as you could possibly be to all the other candidates and make it into basically two monkeys throwing shit at each other. Because their research indicated that by doing so, their opponents... the reasonable people and the reasonable people who would vote for their opponents get so put off the entire political process that they don't vote at all. And they also notice that their own voters, the idiots, the nasty people and members of society, actually like it and will be put off the voting process last. So essentially, he who does the dirtiest politics and offends the most people into not voting at all winds up retaining the most of the power for themselves in terms of the voting public, which I thought was an incredible dynamic to notice.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing, this is the kind of strategies they'll go to. And here in the UK at the moment, they form this progressive a progressive alliance, which is Labour and Greens and UKIP coming together, and Lib Dems, basically to come together to try and get the Tories out. So what they've done is they're saying, oh, well, you don't stand somebody there, and so that we're going to win that seat or gives us a better chance, and you step down from that seat so you can win that seat. And it's this tactical voting that's come into play, and it's just, it's going to be nuts, because if they pull it off, you're going to have, a kind of coalition government, which in a way, it's just madness. It's just,
In New Zealand, we got really pissed off with the first past the post pulpit, right? And so we brought MMP, mixed member proportional voting. So you vote for somebody in your electorate and you vote for some party overall. And whoever gets past the overall votes plus the local electorate votes, and everybody thought this would change everything. And sure enough, all new parties came in. But guess what? The same frickin' New World Order policies kept coming through. The same international banking policies are not getting repealed. And that's why I mentioned it again, that shell game, because I've noticed a very, very distinct pattern after only following elections for maybe 10 years, that every decade or so, there is a radical shift in the public consciousness and what they want, and they try to manifest that in forms of voting for somebody who is beholden to the banks again, right? Every single time. Right,
yeah,
and that's why nothing changes. But because the cycle takes so long to be repeated, the vast, vast, vast majority of people can't remember what they had for breakfast this morning, let alone how they voted and how it turned out 10 years ago.
Well, exactly, and this is the thing, is that now you've got this situation in the UK where UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party, they had this one policy party, and it would just happen. They had a referendum, do we leave the EU? Yes. So why does the party still exist? And they just had the local elections a few weeks ago, throughout a lot of Britain, and the UKIP vote just dropped off the edge of the planet, because why would anybody vote UKIP now? Because there's no reason to, because their one policy has happened, it's been enacted, and Nigel Farage did a great job, and so did Aaron Banks, to be fair. And now we're going to leave the EU, and now that what is that party there? And that's where we're going to have like 6,500 people in Plymouth in my constituency, who really might well just turn around and vote Conservative, just because the Conservatives are in charge of Brexit, or that's the way that it's perceived, and that's why it's going to be really hard for somebody like Luke, the Labour candidate, I think, to win the seat against Orville or Oliver Corville. But we'll see, because there's still 3 weeks to go, and I've got a few tricks up my sleeve that I can pull out of the bag, I don't know, if I get my deposit back, I'll be happy. But at the same time, it's been a good experience so far. I'm only a week in, really, so it's been a good process.
Now, in terms of, you mentioned something before about Jeremy Corbyn being a good man, right? And I've heard it before many, many times, and it just kind of struck me right then. I was like, this person's a good man, that person's a good man, that person's a good man. And it's usually when they're describing a politician that they're going to vote for that they don't know personally. And I thought to myself, whoa, that's an interesting pattern recognition there. He's a good man, he's a good man, he's a good man. What is it about a good man? It's trust. Okay?
Yeah.
The only reason why you'd say somebody is a good man is that you think that you've got their trust, right, essentially. And the problem with being a politician or a businessman is that your trust can easily be bartered and sold and easily be manipulated and garnered. And the thing is, when we got a businessman for a prime minister instead of a politician, we got $100 billion in debt increase in 8 years, and that was up from $8 billion, which was the total debt that all previous prime ministers in the country's history has combined. And when activist Penny Bright talked about this, how he went from Wall Street to Molesworth Street, which is where our parliament is on, it's the equivalent of Downing Street and Pennsylvania Avenue, she said that there's a very, very different way that we go about things when you're doing business to the way you do things in politics. In business, it's a conversation. It's a handshake. It's something behind the scenes. It's a negotiation between people, between individuals. With politics, on the other hand, it's completely different because you have scribes scribbling down everything that you're saying in every single meeting, with every kind of meeting that you're actually doing. It's all on the public record because you're a public servant. The way that you do business is not the way that you should do politics, because the way we do business is supposed to be about freedom, creativity, and the way that politics is supposed to work is, well, I think Jefferson, he got written a letter one time by this medical doctor, and the doctor was concerned. It said, Mr. Jefferson, how can you be sure that this new government that we're creating will only have good men working in there? And Jefferson wrote him the letter back, and they're both at the archives at the Congress, I think. And okay, he said, good men? There is no such thing. The Constitution is to be chains upon men so that they cannot do their will without the will of the people.
And there you go. There you have it right there. You know, it's all very Masonic as well. You know, and this is the other thing, is that a lot of the MPs are Masons and legally trained. 70% of them as well. It's insane, really, and it's got this secret, hidden elite network mafia, or however you want to describe it, that is pulling the strings of a lot of these MPs. I mean, you know, Oliver Corville for the Conservatives, who is in my constituency and won by 523 votes, you know, from the Labour candidate Luke last time. So that's how close it was here. But, you know, he admitted yesterday in one of the hustings that he has voted every time for, you know, alongside his government. So this is the thing, is they crack that party whip, you know, and people like Oliver just fall straight in line and don't care about their constituents. They don't care about anything apart from putting their party first. And, you know, even though they say stuff like before they get elected, like Johnny Mercer, the other guy who's Conservative, seems a nice guy, but before he got elected in, he was all like, I'm not going to follow the toe of the party line. They won't be able to control me. I'm a Conservative, though, but they won't be able to control me. And he goes in then, and, you know, 90% of his stuff is just towing the party line. And this is the thing, is that they've got control of these puppets, because that's all they are. They're just people in office, although some people, sometimes they refer it to power, which is totally wrong, but that's how they perceive it, and that's part of the problem. And this is the thing, is that, you know, you're there to serve people and to do your best that you can, you know, to represent them in Parliament and put forward ideas and put forward legislation and stuff and vote or how you see fit for them, not how you see fit for your party. And that's the thing, is that people are putting their parties first rather than the people. And much like the government puts profit first before the planet, before people, before anything. You know, and this is the thing, is that they're all focused on money and profits and this, that, the other way. Really, we should just take over the monetary policy, and then we're in charge of the money supply. And we take that out of the hands of private banks, and then suddenly we don't have to pay this chasing our tail with interest rates and national debt and all this stuff. And, you know, there's all these different taxes in Britain. We could just bring in the teal tax, the total economic
active levy.
That's it. Yeah, it's there. And have that transaction tax, and which would kind of cost virtually nothing to collect because it would all be done electronically, and would bring in for about three or four times more the revenue than all the other 360 taxes that we have now, which includes council tax, income tax, all that kind of big stuff, you know, even business rates.
Mm. Well, I was just thinking about how many documents and how many laws, etc., are all about tax, and how many people actually understand those taxes and those tax laws and have read them and so on and so forth. And I'm just thinking, it's like, are we talking about kind of like this taxation religion here, whereby it's like in the Dark Ages where they banned reading and they banned the Bible being published in English and stuff like that, and excommunicated the king in order to keep the power out of people of the written word? I mean, is that what we're talking about here, just in a monetary tax policy sense of the word?
Yeah, you are. And a great example of that is the fact that, you know, for the last 7-8 years, I've not paid council tax. You know, in 2012, the local council here famously or infamously made me bankrupt unlawfully. And I had a local government ombudsman report, which was upheld in my favour. You know, I found 3 council maladministration, you know, a couple of council malfeasance in public office as well, but you know, a negligent misstatement. But I've now got a massive claim against the uni. I've just been back. I've got a massive claim against the council, Plymouth City Council, rather. I settled out of court with the university for my law degree, which is quite funny. They didn't want a law student suing them. But, yeah, basically, I'm in a situation now where I've got a big claim against Plymouth City Council, but I've spent the last 6 years trying to figure out, from a legal perspective, how they're enforcing council tax through the magistrates' courts in Britain. And what I've discovered is that they're using the poor law, which was abolished in 1971, the Courts Act, Section 3. And basically, it's there, abolished courts of quarter session. But then you discover, you know, that they're still using it to enforce rates in 1972. And that changed into poll tax, which then evolved into council tax. And it's all effectively the same thing. It's the same process. It's just a rebrand and a different way of the way that they collect it. And in the courts, there's no laws, there's no rules, there's no disclosed jurisdiction, and you can say what you like in there, and it won't have an effect. And in 10 seconds flat, they'll stamp a big pile of paper like that. They'll just stamp the top copy, and there'll be like thousands of what they call liability orders. I like to refer them to as ability to lie orders, because that's basically what it is. And you'll have like 1,000. At a time, and the council will get paid 25-30 quid per one on top of what each one is saying you owed a whole year's worth of council tax. That's 1,500 quid and all that stuff. And the court are getting paid something like £9 for the summons that they send out, and then they get paid another 15-20 quid for every order that's made. So you've got HMCTS, this government organisation supposed to be independent, holding these private quasi-tribunal hearings in their venues where there's no law, no jurisdiction, and they're just processing these, stamping these orders, and it's money laundering. The council are making a fortune, the HMCTS are making a fortune, and you go in there and say stuff like I did, let's go to McDonald's, and they go, yeah, actually, we can do that, because we're just using this room as a venue. You know, there's no law in here, there's no rules. We're just using this room purely as a venue to rubber stamp our orders that we brought to the court and pretend to you that we can put you in jail. And this is the thing. They can put you in jail with these orders, and they do. I've got three or four people out of jail now and prevented a lot more people going in jail as well. And the thing is that what it is, it's this King's Privy Council where they're using this jurisdiction from the poor law, and even though the Queen's enthroned, the King's Privy Council's still there, and like a chessboard, it topples it. And so they're using these orders, and the council are in control of the courtroom. The council are in control of the arrest warrants, civil arrest warrants that are issued for people who don't pay council tax, which is insane. It's like an oxymoron, you know, a civil arrest warrant. And then they come to your house, they pick you up with bailiffs and sometimes the police. They take you sometimes not even to court, but just straight to the prison. And when you do a judicial review or you pay the money, it's the council that fax the court and or phone the court up and say, oh, yeah, you can release that guy. You know, and while you're in there, to the taxpayer, you know, you're getting free board accommodation, you're getting free use of a library and a gym. You can get to sit around and watch TV all day without paying the bollocks that is the TV license that should be abolished. And it's insanity. When you come out, you don't owe any money because you've been paying it off tax-free about 60 quid a day. You know, it's absolutely insane. Anyway, I'll take a breather and shut the fuck up.
Well, I just do wonder now, it's kind of like, do you have a nice slavery system there, bro? Is it beautiful enough? You know, is it orderly? Is it getting down to the point where you can grovel in front of a magistrate and go, oh, master, I am a worm. Please give me your mercy and your favor. I am a worm. This kind of thing in order to curry favor. In fact, how did Indian immigrants once get a favor from the magistrate? They curried it.
Oh, man.
Get it? You carry favor? That's a bad man. I'm just a bad, bad man. Well, because everybody likes curry, don't they? And and because of the great thing about culturelessness migration, the only familiarity anybody has with any other country's culture is their food nowadays. I mean, think about it. You ask anybody in the street, what do you think immigration has brought to this country? And everybody will say, oh, well, there's this food and stuff like that. But they don't actually know how other cultures impact you when they come in.
I mean, in Plymouth, that's a good example, because in Plymouth you've got Mexicans, you've got Chinese, Japanese, you've got Polish, you know, Turkish kebab shops, all that stuff. You've got loads of different, types of, cuisine, international cuisine, if you want to call it. There's even a Jamaican place down on Union Street, which is really good. So this is the thing, is that that kind of stuff has really benefited places like Plymouth, and Plymouth is a port as well, which is really cool. But this is the thing, is that we've got to get away from party politics, you know, locally and nationally and internationally, you know, and it is starting to happen, which is good. But, you know, the other thing is that if what you allow is what will continue, and you made a good point there at the end of the day, we are in a big world of slavery and usury, and then we're all debt slaves to the private banks. And until that changes, nothing really, you know, fundamental really is going to change.
Until all of us are free, none of us are free.
Yeah, and until we get independent people that aren't connected to political parties to go and stand for office in their local constituencies, and then we just have to wake up to actually put a piece of paper, you know, vote for them, put a mark on a piece of paper and vote for these good men and women across the country. And there are a lot of independents now standing, and it's really good. You know, the other thing is, it's quite funny because, you know, this is the first job that I have applied for in 23 years. Yeah, I told my mum that, because she lives in Australia, my mum lives, and my parents live in Adelaide, and my nephews and my sister and stuff. And, you know, I talked to them on Skype, and I said, oh, I applied for a job. And she's like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I was like, well, you know, it's about time. And she was like, oh, let me know how you get on. So I Skyped her last week and said, I'm down to the last six. You know, you know. So she doesn't really know what's going on, but it's going to be fun. I told my daughter, I promised her a surprise. I thought, I think she thinks that I'm going to get her a kitten. But when I told her I was running to become the local MP, she just looked at me and went, oh, my God, does that mean people are going to take pictures of us? It was quite funny. But she's lovely, and she gets it, and she's really proud. And she got me a Batman badge at the weekend and told me that I've got to wear it whenever I go to these hustings and stuff. And the other irony is that, you know, I've been shouting about voting for none of the above and that being an option on the ballot paper. And that's why we try to set up no party as a political party. Then we realised, well, we'll be controlled by the Electoral Commission Act and we'll be controlled by loads of other things because we'll be registered and all that stuff. So the idea then just was like a eureka moment, just to focus on a movement and focus on the independent candidate, because that's what Parliament was built for, that's what existed, and that's what was intended for. And until we kind of get parties become government, until we change that mould, or break that mould rather, then nothing really is going to change, really.
Yeah. Well, who was it that said, I can't remember who told me this, but he said, if you really want to destroy a good idea, turn it into an organisation.
They're not wrong, you know, and this is the thing, is that you might, it's like anonymous is a good idea, and that's why it's remained anonymous. It's just there in the ether, you know. And this is the thing, until we take the party out of politics, which is a good strapline that I've been using, you know, that we're going to be just controlled in a world of usury. It doesn't matter whether we pick red, blue, or we get patsies or wolves in sheep clothing like Corbyn to front it, you know, it's going to be nuts. And the other thing is, it's quite funny because I have got a connection with Theresa May, or sometimes I call her Treason May, which kind of suits her. But years ago when she was Home Secretary, she had one of these immigration cases, and she didn't follow a High Court order. And there's a High Court judge, Judge Cotto in Exeter, very good man, decent man, and he found her, Theresa May, the now PM, to be in contempt of court. And around that same time, I was in front of Judge Cotter for my possession, appeal against my possession hearing against my house, which is now in my private family trust for my daughter years ago, which is what I did to make sure it's protected. But in that hearing, when I was before him, because I had two hearings, the first one, he told the bank that we would adjourn until they came back for the contract for the mortgage, which I agreed to. And it wasn't for 18 months when we came back to court and we had a hearing and they didn't produce a contract, and he had to agree that I'd been right all along, that for a mortgage, you don't get a contract, you have an agreement. And that's why for that entire process, which was about 32 months, I only paid £1 for my mortgage. And because the bank didn't refund it, they'd agreed. And that's the bottom line with a mortgage, or a death grip, as you want to call them, that you don't need a contract. It's purely an agreement. So if you can't pay your mortgage, just pay a quid. And you'll go into a little bit of arrears, but they won't be able to repossess your house. And it's insane. And that's the thing, is that I remember Judge Cotter saying to me, I didn't know that. This is enlightening me, this case, you know, and what you're bringing to the table. I'm sat here thinking, I'm going to go back to my wife and say, you know, we don't have a contract for our mortgage. You know, it's actually in the transcript. You know, and this is the thing, is that that's the difference right there. She's the Prime Minister, found in contempt of court. I go before him. I tell him there's no contract for a mortgage.
When, just a couple of two points I wanted to get out here before you can go out. We were still waiting on Ralph Ellis to maybe join us for a few minutes on air, but may hold over to the next hour if you're not too tired, which I know that you are.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's okay.
Russell Malcolm.
I really want to speak to Ralph. I really want to speak to Ralph.
Mm, well, a friend of mine, Russell Malcolm, he done a whole bunch of exposing his scumbaggery here in New Zealand, and he said one thing on my show one time that when you want to be looking for a good MP – you're going to be looking for somebody with a track record of self-sacrifice for the greater good, right? Track record of self-sacrifice for the greater good, right? That's pretty much all you really need. And then I was like, what if you're a good man and you go in, right? And it seems to me that you're looking at a number of different options because, firstly, there's a parliamentary induction process. Okay, you've got to learn all the rules of parliament. You've got to be here by a certain time, essentially. And they become so busy and sleep-deprived that it becomes a cult indoctrination ceremony technique, essentially. And then there's the fact that the Queen has the powers that be under surveillance themselves. So that's one of the main
difficulties
that I have about it, because it's like, if you are an MP, automatically you get in, they surveil you, they dig up your life, anything bad that you've done. There are good men who have done bad things, all right, and they will bring it up and then just throw it out into the public and demonize you and that kind of thing. But we only have maybe a couple of minutes left in the thing, and I believe we're being joined by Ralph Ellis here. Ralph, you want to turn on your webcam there, buddy?
Yeah, if I can find it. Yeah, give me a couple of minutes.
That's all we've got, unfortunately. So we're just reuniting these two old friends here from quite some time ago. Say hello, guys.
Hey, hi, Danny.
How are you doing, mate? How are you doing?
Yeah, not seeing you for about 10 years or more. It's down in Portsmouth or wherever you were then.
Plymouth. Yeah. I'm still in the same house.
All right. So, yeah, things good?
Well, yeah, things are really good. He's only paying £1 a month on his mortgage.
that's not true at the moment, but I did do that for 32 months. That is true.
that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm just up for Parliament. I've put myself up as an independent candidate.
Oh, excellent. That sounds like a jolly good idea. We need some fresh thinking in Parliament. And we need some videos, documentaries doing as well. We were talking about that before. So, yeah, perhaps we can get together with a documentary at some time.
I was going to ask you about that. My Stonehenge film is on YouTube, actually, if you want to check it out. I'll send you the link.
All right. I'm sure the listeners will want to look at that as well. So what's that about?
If you go to Stonehenge.tv is the website, because I went on Dragon's Den in 2005 with a product called the Bedlam Cube, which is like a 3D Tetris-style puzzle. And Bruce Bedlam is the inventor of the Bedlam Cube. And before I went into selling puzzles, I made a film with Bruce about his discovery with Stonehenge. And it really is a discovery. It's quite amazing. And it's all about the number three, or actually it's not the number three, it's just a bit more than three. And I turned to him one day and went, "What you mean, pie?" And we were stood there under the stones in Stonehenge. And I said to him, "Bruce, isn't the logo for Stone, you know, that's it, you found it on, but on YouTube, if you type in Bruce Bedlam Stonehenge Solution, that's the film you want to watch. And that's the film that I made. And basically, you know, and this is the thing, the logo for Pi is Stonehenge, basically, or at least the trilith.
That's quite interesting. Well, unfortunately, we've now run out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, Ralph will be joining us in the next hour. DannyBamping.com is Danny's website there. So please, if you're in the Plymouth area, go out and vote for him if you can. We'll be right back after the break. Remember, this is a listener-supported broadcast. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com and donate today. Back in a moment.